From Nashville, Tennessee, this is Saddle Up America on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Good afternoon from Nashville, Tennessee. I'm your host, Gary Holt, and this is a special edition of Saddle Up America. We're excited to be welcoming today our special guest, Jim McGarvey, with Backcountry Horsemen of America, along with Julie Broadway, president of the American Horse Council and the newly appointed director of policy and legislative affairs with the American Horse Council, Brian Bendel. And this is going to be an informative and action-packed hour on Saddle Up America. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Legacy Benefit Group. For over 30 years, Legacy Benefit Group has helped businesses and individuals create, protect, and preserve their financial legacy. Now take a deep seat in the saddle, grab a cup of coffee, and when we come back, we're going to be talking with our special guest today on a special edition of Saddle Up America on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world, streaming live, online, and on demand at equestrianlegacy.net.
Everything in life has its own rhythm. Like poetry and rhyme, the change of the seasons. It's magical, the timing in creation. The way horses move, it's a perfect groove. team, my horse and I, as I fall and as I rise to the rhythm of the ride. It's a natural high, two hearts beat and 4 feet fly. We're moving as one, hoofbeats are the perfect drum.
Well, that's Marianne Kennedy's The Rhythm of the Ride, and we're going to welcome now our unofficial or semi-official co-host, Jim McGarvey. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Gary. Good to be here again. Thank you.
Well, good to have you. Good to have you. We had a great show last month with you and Randy, and a lot of comments and people that were sending emails. We may follow up just a little bit on some of that later on in the show. But right now, why don't you introduce our very special guest today?
Yeah, I'm really, really glad to have our guests on here. And I want to, they are part in leadership of the American Horse Council. And some of your listeners may have heard of the American Horse Council, but thinking in how to describe the AHC, the American Horse Council, that's based in Washington, D.C., they represent the most important organizations and companies in the equine industry in the United States. They represent the horses from the unwanted horses all the way to the Triple Crown, the thoroughbreds that run the Triple Crown, and all of our horses that are in between. And so it's a strong organization, very important, and I'm really pleased to introduce and have on our show today Julie Broadway, who's president of the American Horse Council, and Brian Brindle, Policy and Legislative Affairs Director. Welcome, folks. Glad to have you on.
Thanks. We're looking forward to speaking with both you, Jim, and Gary.
Yeah, thanks, Thank Jim. Thanks, Gary. Glad to be here.
Good afternoon to you both.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking if we could, Julie has now been the president for just over a year and well-received, great leader in the American Horse Council. The Backcountry Horsemen have been members of the American Horse Council for 19 years, so we'll be coming soon to be celebrating our second decade finishing our second decade with the American Horse Council. We work very closely with them. We have members in virtually every state, and so we work closely with them. Julie, maybe give a little background on yourself and how you got to the American Horse Council, what you did, and then what the American Horse Council does, and maybe you could introduce Brian Brindle then after that and let him speak a bit. Thank you, Julie. Go ahead.
Sure, happy to do that. Well, let me begin by saying you can tell from my accent I'm a native of North Carolina, so I'm a Southern Belle. I spent over 25 years in a for-profit industry, all the while keeping one foot in the nonprofit world. I started riding as a child, mostly recreational trail riding. Then as I got older, started competing some, got into doing some breeding, managed a horse show, got involved with the state horse councils. And over time, I moved through a number of organizations, and I spent 10 years at the American Morgan Horse Association as their executive director before coming to the American Horse Council. So as Jim alluded to, I've been here a little over a year. It's been a great transition for me. It's very exciting, lots of interesting things to work on, of course, in D.C. I jokingly tell people that they really cannot possibly put their head around the diversity of the topics that we get involved with. Again, as Jim alluded to, we go from the recreational trail rider, carriage operators, we have pro rodeo, we have eventing, and we have endurance, and all the way through racing and just every aspect of the horse industry, which means we have a lot of synergy, a lot of passion, but often we have differences of opinion on certain topics. which makes it challenging for the American Horse Council sometimes to present a unified voice. And really, the purpose of the American Horse Council is to be the voice of the equine industry. Our mission statement, which we newly adopted in June of this year, is to advocate for the social, economic, and legislative interest of the U.S. horse industry. That's what we're all about. So we have a small staff, but we're a busy group with lots of things on our plate. And I'll just say for myself, it's been a real honor to serve in the leadership role. We've got a strong board of trustees and some great committees. Jim chairs our Recreation Trails and Public Land Use Committee. We have a number of other committees. Jim, what else would you like to know about me? My undergraduate degree is from the University of North Carolina. I hold a master's in business from Weems Graduate School, and I graduated from Duke University's Advanced Nonprofit Leadership Program, and I'm a certified association executive. I've been in the nonprofit industry for a number of years now.
Wow. Wow. Well, you came from the Morgan world into a totally different environment, and when you were talking about some differences, there certainly are in the horse world. And faced with not only some great programs to orchestrate and manage, but some real controversy that takes place. You're in the right place for controversy there in Washington, aren't you?
Indeed. Our office, I jokingly tell everybody, our office is located at 1616 H Street, which means you can look out our window and see the White House about two blocks away. And there's a protest outside our window almost every day on some topic.
Gosh, we're happy to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. So I'm going to share briefly. Brian Brindle is our new Director of Policy and Legislative Affairs. He just joined us a few weeks ago, so I'm going to let him introduce himself and give you some background about himself.
All right. Thanks a lot, Julie. Like Julie said, I did just join the American Horse Council a few weeks ago. Some background on myself. I'm a native Texan, lived there for the first 18 years of my life, and moved off to Virginia. Went to undergraduate at Hampden-Sydney College down in Virginia. And for the past 15 years, I've worked as a registered lobbyist here in Washington, D.C. Just very quickly, I've represented agricultural and manufacturing interests, starting off with a small boutique lawn lobbying firm called Bays & Miller, where we represented several agricultural groups, and I got my feet wet, so to speak, on a lot of the land access issues that we deal with here at the Horse Council that we can talk about in more detail later on. After leaving that small law firm, I got recruited by the National Association of Manufacturers, and while there, focused mainly on environmental policy issues. After about 5 or 6 years at NAM, also located here in Washington, I represented the cement manufacturing industry, where I really dove into the area of tax reform, which is a fairly hot area that should gain some traction moving forward during the next couple of years here in D.C. I did get my law degree from Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, and one of my big passions or hobbies is definitely riding. And a quick side note here, I'm here at AHC because 3 years ago, a friend of mine down in Virginia in Warrenton recruited me as part of the Horse Council's Ready to Ride program. She basically coaxed me into taking riding lessons 3 years ago, so I picked up the activity and have since been spending time fox chasing down Virginia, and I'm also taking polo lessons from time to time, which is pretty fun.
So, oh, wow.
Horse world. And I'm very, very happy to be here. It's a great place to be.
We're glad to have you with us as well.
That's a very quick study, 3 years into the fox hunting and the polo, and a reward on the riding program that started just a few years before, 3 years ago. Glad you're with us very much. Looking forward to working with you. I know our backcountry horsemen are, and we've always got a lot of things going on. Focusing anyway on the land and the trails, but on Julie's comment that, you know, and Gary, that we can't horse people can't always agree on the same thing, but I kind of bring it down to, 10 people standing around a trailer having a stubborn horse, and there's 10 different ways to load this horse, and everybody's got a surefire way, and they'll argue about it, but it just goes with it. I think it makes the horse people an interesting crowd, very interesting crowd to have friends and acquaintances with. What are the maybe Julie could talk a little bit about who are the organizations and the programs that American Horse Council is involved with?
Sure.
Who's in it and who what they do?
Okay, so we have about 700 individual members of the American Horse Council. We have all state horse councils. And then we have about 150 equine associations. And again, that ranges from National Thoroughbred Racing to the Pony Club to Equine Land Conservation Resource, just the American Quarter Horse Association, you name it, they're all part of this. I like to tell people that if you add up all of the people we touch through those individual members and those organizational members, our reach is about 900,000 people.
Oh, wow.
To your point, Jim, we work on a lot of different things. We just did a new strategic plan, and of course that means that we've really tried to put down on paper what our focus is going to be for the next few years. So I'll just give you a couple of highlights from that. In the area of advocacy, we really want to work hard to be the voice of the industry to the public and to government authorities. That means we work with a number of different coalitions that might be ranging from the H-2B Visa Coalition to the American Recreation Coalition to a number of other organizations that we reach out to and partner with. We also really focus a lot on health and welfare, and our objective there is to advocate for the health and well-being of horses. By creating a forum for discussion on welfare issues and sharing of best practices. Now, what that means in staff-wise is, of course, Brian is really the key to our advocacy campaigns. Cliff Williamson is our Director of Health and Regulatory Affairs, so he really works on health and welfare. We also sponsor the Unwanted Horse Coalition, which really works to educate people about responsible horse ownership. We offer gelding clinics and gelding vouchers to help inform people about proper management of horse populations. And we really want to work hard to educate people about the importance of understanding what is involved in owning a horse from birth until your retirement or its retirement, and in many cases we talk about retraining and rehoming when a horse moves from one career to the next. And Ashley First is our director of the Unwanted Horse Coalition. The other two components of our new strategic plan are really about marketing and about community outreach and educating people about the social benefits of the equine industry. We work really closely with Christy Schulte and our marketing alliance on the Time to Ride program, which Brian is a product of. The whole purpose of that program is to expose people to horses, invite them to have an experience, and to engage with horses, and hopefully convince them that there's a lot of reasons to build a long-term relationship with a horse. Jim's aware, Gary may not have known this, but July the 22nd was National Meet a Horse Day. And we had events all over the country for people to come out and meet horses. And the staff here in Washington and I, in conjunction with the United States Department of Agriculture, had an event down at the Farmers Market right downtown in D.C. And we were really lucky. The National Park Service sent some mounted patrol officers over with their horses. And the Caisson Platoon came and joined us and brought several horses. And everybody that came through the farmer's market that day got an opportunity to have a up-close and personal experience with a horse. So it was
oh, that's
a lot of
great.
Fun. It was really great.
That is great.
The, So that's one of our real challenges, is to go out there and expose people. You guys probably are as aware of anybody that a lot of our young people now don't have that kind of agricultural background or have that opportunity to meet a horse. And so getting young people out of their laptops and off of their phones and into that kind of a setting is one of the things we really work hard to try to promote.
That is
the
great.
Last thing that I'll mention from our strategic plan is we're really taking a hard look at our overall governance structure and some of our committee structures here at the American Horse Council. Jim's, as I said, he's chair of Recreation, Trails, and Public Land Use. That's a new name, Jim, and I always get my tongue twisted on it. but we also have a racing advisory committee. We have a show horse committee. We have a welfare committee, and we have a health and regulatory committee. We have a membership task force. We have a number of other task force and committees out there. So we're looking really hard at what's the best way to be organized and make really good use of all of our members and their areas of expertise and experience and that kind of thing. So that's one of the components of the plan that's really been hot on the front burner right now. The only other thing that I'd mention quickly is Jim's well aware, and we want to encourage all of your listeners, Gary, we're doing a new national equine economic impact study. It's been 10 years since we did an economic impact study, and that study is so important to our industry because the data that we collect there, how many horses there are in the U.S., how much revenue, direct and indirect, how much tax dollars we spend, everything the equine industry represents, that data is used to help us educate the public and those congressional legislative members about the significance of our industry. So we really need everybody go online, click on our website, which is horsecouncil.org, and find the economic impact study, take the survey, and give us your feedback. Survey is open until August the 18th, and then in September we will have the first draft of the report from our consultants about what's going on in the industry.
Well, that's great. That is great. Well, that's extremely important. I think particularly legislatively, for the understanding of the economic impact that the horse industry has on the economy here in the United States. We talked a little bit about this last week, I think, didn't we, Jim, as far as what the economic numbers were, the dollar impact on our economy? And
it's been getting included more in the recreational column when it's mentioned about the impact of recreation in America. Often the horses hadn't been in past years been a part of that equation. And so I think this, even more so, there was a great study that American Horse Council did in 2005. I mean, it was my go-to document when referring to statistics in the country. I have a continuous chart where I would show the 50 states, starting with the largest, California, Texas, Florida, the horse population. And the horse population equation, for instance, the highest per, this was in 2005, the highest per capita horse population in the state was Connecticut, you know, per capita. And that New Jersey has 3/4 as many horses as Wyoming. So, I mean, there's a lot of funny numbers that people don't realize to make an impact on that. And so when you tell the congressman from New Jersey that they have 3/4 as many horses as Wyoming, oh, we are a cowboy state, you know.
I'm sorry, Gary. I was going to say, what Jim is saying is not only is that true when you talk to a congressional member from a particular state, but it's also really useful more even at the local level. Let's say you have an arena and the local government is trying to decide whether to make an investment in improving the structures that are there or the barns or those kinds of things. Those numbers are used by all those organizations and state horse councils to help show why that investment is worthwhile and what the return's going to be to the local economy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What are the what is the largest segment of the horse industry as far as horseshoes? Julie?
I'm going to do this off the top of my head, Gary. I think the largest discipline segment is probably thoroughbred and standardbred racing. Recreation is definitely one of the top ones. I would say recreation is probably the top one, isn't it, Jim? That's probably the, my very first one.
Yeah, probably is. If you, you can equate a lot of horse activity in the recreational field.
Yep. Yeah, and so recreation's right up, recreational trail riding is right up there at the top, probably followed by the racing segment. Then after that, it becomes a little more gray as to which is in the third, fourth, and fifth place. But certainly a lot of economic impact from a variety of the discipline areas, whether they're polo or pro rodeo or any of those other kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah. I think as far as the number of people that are participating in horse activities, it probably is far and above the recreational trail riders, trail users out there as far as just numbers of people.
Well, we have a statistic, and don't hold me to this, but we believe from the anecdotal data that we have that roughly 27 million people ride a horse at least once a year.
Great. Wow.
Well, that's a great number. I know that in the American Quarter Horse survey they did about 3 years ago, of their 250,000 members, the main reason they owned a quarter horse was the trail rides. So that was 62%. Mm-hmm. And so what was kind of, you know, the rest is showing and breeding and lawn ornaments, but that even surprised the quarter horse folks that there was that high of a number. Mm-hmm. And it sort of shifted their focus and some of the things they try to do.
Right. And I would add to that that we're really eager to see how the numbers may have changed since 10 years ago, since the last study.
Mm-hmm.
The last study, we had 1.4 million full-time jobs in the equine industry. We're looking to see if that's gone up or changed a whole lot. And we had $102 billion, with a B, in economic impact.
You know, I think that along with the use of the horse or users, I think an interesting organization that's a member of the American Horse Council is the Association of Equine Practitioners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what they come out with is what gauges the health and medical care of all the horses, you know. And so I think it's always interesting that when I talk to those members that are at the national meeting and hear their talks, they have such a wide impact. It's national. They pick up diseases that are starting a little bit of outbreaks here and there, and they put together. Go ahead, Julie. Can you talk about that organization just a few minutes?
Yeah, we have a great partnership with the Association of Equine Practitioners, and one of the things that I would encourage your readers to do is to get familiar with the Equine Disease Communication Center. That's a joint effort between the American Horse Council and the Equine Practitioners and the United States Equestrian Federation. And that is a website you can go to. You can sign up. It will send you alerts for diseases that are in your area, make you aware of certain events that are happening. It has a list of diseases that horse owners should be familiar with and be aware of. And these are reportable diseases. Diseases that have been confirmed, so people are confident in the data that they're looking at. But the equine practitioners have some fabulous programs and do a lot of work with veterinarians to maintain their CEUs and those kinds of things. And Jim's exactly right. They put out some fabulous literature.
Well, I want to take a quick break and when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of these programs that you had just briefly mentioned, like the Unwanted Horse Coalition and the Time to Ride program, because I think both of those will be of great interest to our listeners. And We're going to take this quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Jim and Julie and Brian on the Saddle Up America on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world, streaming live, online, and on demand at equestrianlegacy.net.
Rolling off green pastures to where the sagebrush meets the pine. We'll do our bidding to the land we'll leave behind. Welcome in the highlands and the summer days so long. Little piece of heaven sitting on the cowboy's throne. Looking for the solace in mine. Smile as I listen to my pony's cricket roll. From the misty haze of twilight, when the night horse rings her bell, roll it up. Saddle up and hit that loving trail. Ride off towards the mountains and the snow-capped covered peaks, hoping that beyond the pass you're waiting there for me to put an end to this long and lonely road. Smile as I listen to my pony's cricket roll. Deserts of Nevada to the streams in Idaho, paradise to Cami High, these trails I'll lead you home. And I'm through with days of wandering, so I'm coming home to stay. The only view I need is looking through the ears of that old bay, waiting for the solace in my soul. Smile as I listen to my pony's cricket roll. I found the solace in my soul. Smile as I listen to my pony's cricket
That is Trinity Seeley and her great song, Cricket Roll. And you guys, Trinity is a for real ranch wife and cowgirl. And horses are an integral part of any ranching operation, as they have been for decades and decades going back our ranching heritage. So anyway, she knows what she's talking about when she sings about cricket roll. She's a big fan of the vaquero style of horsemanship and riding. But anyway, this great song, and I want to get into some of these programs that you've got that I think our audience would be very interested in hearing about. And the first one is the Time to Ride program. Tell us a little bit about that and what its purpose is. And so, we know Brian is a result of this program, so it's got to be good.
That's right. So several years ago, a number of the members of the American Horse Council recognized that we needed to begin to do some marketing for the industry. We needed to try to build a pipeline of new people into the industry, new riders and enthusiasts for the horse industry. So they partnered together to create a marketing alliance. And that marketing alliance began a project called Time to Ride. The idea behind Time to Ride is to get people into host barns. People sign up to be a host, open their barn so people can come in and have an experience with a horse. And each host can design whatever kind of an event they would like. It doesn't have to be put them on a horse right away. It can be just an experience where they get to pet a horse and learn more about horses. It could be a wagon ride. It could be anything that the host would like for it to be. And the hosts are rewarded based upon their creativity and the number of people that come through their facility and have these experiences by winning prizes. Cash prizes, nice cash prizes.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, so it's a great deal. We encourage all barns that have an interest to sign up and be a host. It's not complicated or anything like that. And all you do is collect some information from the people that attend your event and turn that back in to get, to get confirmation of how many people were there. And we also this year are opening a phase two, which encourages hosts to have repeat visitors. So if somebody comes for your first event, you get credit for them in phase one. If they come back and they have another experience with the horse and they begin to take a riding lesson or something like that, you get credit for them in phase two, so you stand a chance to win prizes there. And then the participants also get prizes. They're given some certificates and some different things that are provided by some of the Alliance members to thank them for coming out and having a good time with the horse. It's been around for, I'm going to lose track now, I think 5 or 6 years, and they have done Take a Friend Riding campaigns, which encourage people to take friends riding, a number of different programs, and then the challenge itself, which is the cash prizes that people can win. So very, very exciting program. This year, after 5 years, we met the 100,000 mark, meaning we've had 100,000 people come through those programs, and so we're really excited and celebrating that milestone.
That is great. Well, one of the challenges that I think we see across the board is that young people are not exposed to horses and the equine lifestyle, and there's so many distractions for kids today with their different types of ball games. And as you mentioned earlier, their noses are stuck in their laptops or their phones. But to get outside and experience horses and become the next generation of horse owners and to get involved that way. So I think that's a great, great, great program. We see a lot of the folks that are getting involved in horses maybe for the first time or re-entering the horse world that are in their mid-40s and up. Mm-hmm. And have you guys seen that?
We have seen that, and I will tell you, our market research, no offense to any of the gentlemen, but our market research tells us that the decision maker is mom, and generally mom is, as you said, she's probably in her 40s or 50s. This may have been something she did as a child, and she wants to expose her children or her family to horses. Or she didn't get a chance to do it when she was a child, and now's her opportunity. Her children are old enough that she's got some leisure time and some expendable income, and she can go and take riding lessons. But she takes the kids with her to the barn. So you're right on top of that, Gary. That's the sweet spot there.
Well, it is.
Say amen to that, because I might have been on a horse at a county fair, but the first time was on my honeymoon going down the Grand Canyon, on one of the mules, and Ruth said, "We're going down the canyon." Okay, and then we had horses, and we had the girls rode. It was all I second that emotion that the woman in the household makes that equine decision, and you got to be at a certain point in life too to be able to afford it,
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. The children grown and out. Yeah.
Right, but we're also seeing grandparents now. I mean, they grew up with horses, and now grandparents are continuing to stay involved in the industry and draw their grandchildren back into it. So even if their children may not have the financial means to take riding lessons or be involved, grandparents are reaching out to their grandchildren and saying, "This was an experience I enjoyed as a child, and I want you to have that opportunity." So seeing multi-generations again in the industry.
That is a great thing, and that will help keep the equine world alive to get these young people involved and in the saddle. So that's cool. I did talk with some folks once that put on some horse shows and different activities, and it seemed that the kids liked the speed events. Anything that was fast, they were for that. Just going around the ring in a circle was not too exciting, but when they got into some speed competition, that was almost as good as playing Game of Thrones or something on your computer or whatever these games are that they're playing. But and tell us a little bit about the Unwanted Horse Coalition. How does that work?
So the Unwanted Horse Coalition was formed to educate the industry about the unwanted horse challenges that we face. We believe there are as many as 170,000 unwanted horses in the U.S. These are healthy horses, but they have, for whatever reason, their owners have retired, or they have financial limitations or time constraints. Maybe the horse isn't doing the job that they want them to do. And so these horses, they're not unloved. Don't get me wrong. The name unwanted doesn't imply that nobody wants them. It means that they are ready to be retrained or rehomed and find their next career. And so that's really what we try to do with the coalition, is educate people about responsible ownership, talk to them about what they're getting into when they buy their first horse, talk to them about when this horse isn't working for them, what their options are and different avenues for finding a new home for that horse. It includes the aspect of Operation Gelding, which offers gelding vouchers or gelding clinics, so that we don't have unplanned horses. And the program does a lot of education and outreach, and we're really fortunate that we have such a great kind of support network. The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance and a number of other organizations are very involved with the Unwanted Horse Coalition.
Well, and that has become a problem, a greater problem probably in the last 10 years than it had been in the past. Quite a bit of that due to the economic downturns that we had in 2008. I can remember a sheriff's deputy telling me that, Gary, said there are people that can't feed their horses anymore, and they're taking them and turning them loose on the back roads back in the hills. And
I've heard that story, Gary, and I've heard people talk about they took their two trail horses, threw them in the trailer, went out to go on a trail ride, came back, and there was another horse tied up to the trailer when they got back.
Yeah, it's been a tough situation, and so having a program like this is of great benefit. Just had a conversation with somebody this week about what happens to these horses when people are no longer able to take care of them, whether it be age or economic difficulties. And it is an expensive proposition to own a horse. There's a lot of responsibility and commitment that goes into that. And sometimes it's not all the person's fault when that situation comes up. So anyway, any other program that I'm missing here? I'm just kind of going, you got a great website, and I'm looking through here at some of the programs.
Well, I sort of hit the main programs, but I really want to let Brian talk to you a little bit, because although he's new on board, there's a lot of things going on here in D.C. That affect the entire industry. Tax reform is a hot topic. He can talk a little bit about that. Immigration has been on everybody's mind because of the need for grooms and hot walkers and those kinds of things. And then we get unusual topics sometimes that come to our attention, things that might go further in trail maintenance, like the reduced red tape bill that's going through right now, and some stuff on fire code. So, Brian, I'm going to give you the floor.
Okay. Yeah, thanks, Julie. So while I've also got Jim on the phone here, the American Horse Council is working very close with the BCHA to promote a bill which was introduced last week by Chairman Rob Bishop. He is a Republican of Utah, and he's chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee, which gives him a great purview on a lot of the issues impacting the equine industry. In conjunction with Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat of Oregon, they introduced in both chambers the Recreation, Not Red Tape Act. The bill number on the House side is H.R. 3400. And in a nutshell, what this would do is streamline permits for those seeking recreation outdoors on federal land. And on the tail end of the bill, it's about 41 pages total, there are provisions which would give the Department of Interior Secretary and the USDA Secretary the power to enter into private partnerships to leverage volunteer work to maintain trails on public lands. And this might sound familiar to you guys. As you probably recall, last year, the industry had a great victory in passing the National Forest Systems Trails Stewardship Act, otherwise known as the Trails Act. And what that bill did do, now it's public law, was outline timetables and goals for clearing up trails run by the National Forest System of the United States Department of Agriculture. That should be implemented over the next 2 years once there's a game plan actually put out on the Federal Register. And what this current bill does, the R&R Act, is it expands the scope of the Trails Act from last year by giving similar powers to the Interior Secretary. So we're very excited about this. It certainly gives momentum to our overall objective to keep public lands open to riding. And a quick path forward on the bill, we spoke to staff on the House side today, and they do expect a full hearing of the bill sometime in September or October, at which time they will take amendments on ways to improve and refine the bill. And they have asked us to reach out to their colleagues on the Hill to gain co-sponsors. So we're very excited about that. And I certainly look forward to working with Jim and his colleagues to move this legislation forward.
It's, yeah, we do too, Brian. I think having Rob Bishop, you know, sponsoring this going in, of course, Senator Wyden, in Oregon, Rob Bishop carries a lot of influence with folks in Congress that may not necessarily be attuned to the outdoors and the recreation environment, but so they'll take his guidance just because he said it. And so I think this is important to get his backing, and also it's important that it's getting over now to the Secretary, the Department of the Interior. Our bill that went through last year was under the Department of Agriculture Forest Service. And so this is a good step, and it emphasizes the non-federal partners. There's a lot out there. Backcountry is one of them, but there's a lot of organizations that would just love to be out there volunteering and cut through the red tape, literally the red tape, to get through this.
Right.
So we're excited about it. Yes.
Yes,
what is the what is the
long to maintenance issues?
Yeah, what is the status on the funding? Because when we talked last month, we were looking at an 80% reduction in funding of the National Forest Service. I talked with some folks from the BLM last month, and they were looking at least a reduction of about 1,000 employees with BLM. What's going on with the funding for these programs?
Well, yeah, Gary, that's a very good question. As you know, the president unveiled his budget proposals or budget requests back in the spring, and that would basically take a meat cleaver, not just into interior programs, but programs all across the federal government. In a nutshell, we've got 12 appropriations bills that will move through Congress to fund all the various programs and agencies. At this point, the House and Senate committees have only passed six of those respective bills. And that's actually a fairly good record compared to years past. Congress appears to follow in fairly regular order on this. No final spending bill has actually been conferenced, which is where you get House and Senate lawmakers to hammer out the final spending package for a particular department and send to the president for his signature. But just to give you an idea, the House has passed, or the House, appropriations committee has passed the funding bill for most of the interior programs. And the funding, while coming down a little bit less than funds from last year, it's certainly not as bad as the reductions proposed by the administration.
Well, that's great news.
This is just one example. You know, several of these bills have to move, but for the Bureau of Land Management, the president's budget request was for, just under $1 billion. And that's basically $963 million. And the House appropriators have raised that up to $1,074 million. And that's only $20 million shy of what they appropriated for FY 2017. So I guess the short answer to your question is that, you know, we're definitely in relatively austere times here, but the cuts aren't going to be as severe as those proposed by the president's budget request.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the reasons that it's so important to have this economic impact study prepared and presented so that that our Congress people can understand the value of keeping these programs and funding available so that that income continues to come in.
That's right. Yeah, the economic impact study will help leverage a variety of initiatives. You know, it gets the horse industry in the door to actually speak to the lawmakers, and especially when you're making your case, if you can convince people that these programs actually lead to economic development, then that will make them more likely to fund certain programs at levels that are sustainable for the program.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are the foremost issues that the American Horse Council has to deal with right now? Have we already addressed those?
Yeah, we're looking at appropriations. Julie mentioned tax reform. Horse owners obviously are in business like many other people. In the wake of GOP's disappointment in health care legislation, having stalled, shall we say, for at least the foreseeable future, the administration and congressional Republicans do want to move towards tax reform. There was a meeting with business leaders yesterday here in Washington and senior Trump advisors, and they're urging, that is, the administration is urging business leaders to start talking to their members and constituents about tax reform, and members of the House will be doing the same thing since their recess actually began on Friday. So that looks like that will gain traction. Whether we get actual legislation is an open-ended question, but it does look like there are several principles around which many members are rallying. So hopefully we'll get some relief on that front. From a horse industry perspective, in talking to Julie and others, it appears that we have a lot of members who are structured as so-called pass-through corporations. And just to give you a quick example, a tax rate for a pass-through can be as high as 39%. The president's proposal would bring that down to 15%. And while there's no specific percentage figure in the congressional proposals, at this point, we did have a tax plan back in 2014 where Republicans were advocating for a 25% tax rate for business.
Okay.
So if any of these do gain traction and move forward, we can expect pass-through entities to get a substantial savings.
All right. Question for you. How's the fox hunting going?
It's a lot of fun. So the season doesn't begin for a few more weeks here in Virginia. It's a long-running season. It runs from late August, where we've got cubbing, and goes into early March. And it's very exhilarating, a lot of fun. You did mention I'm a relative novice, so I ride in the second field, which means I don't take any high hedges or jumps, but we do follow the first field and the pack of hounds. And it's a great day to spend the day.
All right. So I had a... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, as you can imagine, we have some interesting staff meetings here because we talk all about our business and the legislative matters. But Ashley First, the Director of Communications and Unwanted Horse Coalition, she was a hunter-jumper person. Cliff Williamson, the Health and Regulatory Affairs person, is a he's also a fox hunter. Brian's doing the polo and the fox hunting, so we have some good conversations about what's going on in the industry.
I have a first cousin who is a surgeon, and he and his wife got into fox hunting years ago, and I recall his father telling him he was an idiot because one wrong jump in his career as a surgeon was over with. So didn't stop him. They kept right on, and the tradition continues through the family. So horses just kind of run in our blood. Are you still able to spend enough time with your Morgans, Julie?
I am indeed. I'm really fortunate that I own a really nice Morgan gelding, and I get a chance to go ride him a couple times a month, and he's a good outlet for me.
Well, I'm sure he is. I'd been to your Facebook page and seen some of your photographs with your horses, so you look pretty good in the saddle. And I'm sure having you in the saddle at American Horse Council has been a big plus for them. So that is cool. And then, of course, Jim does a great job out on the trails as long as Cindy is guiding him in the right direction. Yeah. So why should people get involved with American Horse Council as individuals and other entities, and tell folks how they can do that?
Well, of course, we encourage everybody to get involved, advocate on behalf of the industry, and one of the ways to do that is to support your state horse council and your national American Horse Council by becoming a member, and that helps us to underwrite all these programs that we talked about and to be the voice of the industry, go up on the hill, meet with people, and talk to them about the importance of the industry. It's very funny. I have a staff member who says that being a member of the American Horse Council, you know, when things are going well, you sort of take for granted what we do. It's when the issues start to hit the fan that you think, wow, we really need a voice in Washington. And that's what we do. That's who we are.
That's absolutely correct. You know, I was thinking yesterday as I was thinking about this show, and really it's exactly what you just said. Regardless of what your equine sport and activity is, whether you're a trail rider or whether you're involved in some other equine sport, people forget that there are folks and organizations that are at work to allow people to continue to enjoy what they enjoy doing. And it's easy to not get involved. And so if you enjoy your trail riding, if you enjoy chasing the foxes and following the hounds, or if you enjoy your rodeo activities or whatever your sport is, get involved with the organizations that help keep these things available for you. And give us the website, Julie, for American Horse Council one more time.
Sure. www.horsecouncil.org.
Horsecouncil.org. And Jim McGarvey, why should people get involved with Backcountry Horsemen of America? If they don't know after 5 years, it may not sink in, but why should they get involved with Backcountry Horsemen?
Help keep America's trails open for all.
All right. Good. All right. And that's bcha.org?
That's correct.
BCHA.org. See, after 5 years, I've learned that, even though you changed it sometime during that five-year period. But anyway, I hope everybody has enjoyed this show. It has been very informative, and I appreciate so much the three of you taking your time to be with us and to share this great information. Look forward to having you back with us and do some follow-up on how these things are going legislatively and with some of the other issues. And encourage people to get involved with the Time to Ride program. And if you have questions about the Unwanted Horse program, I would suggest that you get involved as well. So anyway, any closing thoughts, Julie, that you'd like to leave with us, or Brian?
Well, I'll just say thank you to both you and Jim for the invitation to be part of this today. We truly appreciate our partnership with you guys.
Well, thank
you. And just very quickly for our listeners in Utah and Oregon, if you happen to run into Congressman Rob Bishop in Utah or your Senator Ron Wyden in Oregon, please thank them for all the work they've been doing to keep public lands open to riding.
All right. And Mr. Jim McGarvey, any closing thoughts from you today?
Well, this is glad to have Julie and Brian on to really to speak about, I think, the most important equine organization in the United States, which therefore is one of the most important in the world. So really glad you guys could make it today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you, Julie. Thank you. And Brian, thank you. And we'll look forward to seeing some photographs of Brian following the hounds this fall. See how you do chasing
all
those
right.
foxes.
Yeah, I'll send them to you. Be careful what you ask for.
All right. Well, appreciate it so
Thanks,
much.
Gary.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. This Bye. Has been a good show today. We hope you have enjoyed it as much as I have. And we want to remind you to tune in on Sunday morning for Blessed Trails with Belinda Gale, beginning at 9 o'clock, and then join us for the Campfire Cafe, followed by Saddle Up America every Thursday, beginning at noon Central Time on Equestrian Legacy Radio. We want to remind you, as we always do, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride on Equestrian Legacy Radio, heard around the world, streaming live, online, and on demand at equestrianlegacy.net. Thanks for listening, and we'll close the show out today with a great song by our friend in the UK, Mr. Clint Bradley, and it's his song, A Fine Horse. Thanks for listening.
There's a dream for sale, but the price is high. There's a dream and me, the gems won't die. When the sun sinks down low in the western sky, I began to dream, I began to cry. And it's calling, calling, and it's calling to me. There's a letter written deep in my soul, I wonder, will it be delivered before I'm too old? Riding a fine horse through new country tonight, and the dream gets stronger as the years hurry by. And it's calling, calling, yes, it's calling to me. When it's moonlight and shadows, that's my cowboy time. I dream of a life that could never, oh no, never. This island of rain, I close my eyes I'm there again, riding a fine horse through Montana tonight, and the dream will stay with me till the day that I die. And it's calling, calling, yes, it's calling to me, calling, calling, yes, it's calling. Calling.